Welcome to Layers, a podcast about style, women, and how we get dressed, from me, Anna Kinsella, and Stevie Mackenzie Smith. Each episode consists of conversations, interviews, and stories about how we engage with clothes. Today's theme is beginnings.
So we've both been thinking lots about an article that we read on the New York Times at the end of December about items that define 2017. So the ugly sneaker, the bathrobe, the pussy hat for protesting in. And I think lately in general, I've been thinking about items of clothing as individual pieces rather than style in general. I think that's really after seeing two different exhibitions in New York in September last year. The first was Items, which was at MoMA, and it's an exhibition that charts all the different items of clothing that changed the world in the 20th and the 21st centuries. So there were these really great pieces like the leather jacket or Jerry Halliwell's platform heels that she wore in the Spice Girls. And it was really interesting looking at individual items of clothing and thinking about what they meant to that moment in time. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was this small exhibition called Sarah Berman's Closet, which I saw at the Metropolitan Museum. And this recreated the wardrobe of a woman called Sarah Berman, who wore all white after she got divorced from her husband of, I think, 40 or 50 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I became really obsessed with her story. And actually, since then, I started wearing lots of head-to-toe white. So in this piece, there's an actual recreation of her closet, and there are stacks of all of her like white knitwear and cream slacks and all of her crisp white shirts and the small accessories that she would wear on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I think I like the idea of cataloguing what you wear, or at least thinking about your wardrobe as an archive of your interests, mm-hmm. maybe. And I think that's not always possible. You know, that's always like an ideal, maybe.
Yeah.
That actually we all have lots of things in our wardrobe that we don't wear or we have mixed feelings about.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's certainly appealing.
Yeah. Both of those exhibitions sound really interesting, I think. I'm interested in what you said about cataloguing. I started to keep a diary for the first time in several years in 2017. It only lasted a few months, and it was mostly after I read The Folded Clock by Heidi Julewitz, and I kind of got interested in this idea of documenting and kind of... When I was a teenager, all my diaries were so much about my feelings and my emotions as this kind of cathartic process. And this was very much trying to avoid that. It was more about who I saw that day and what I wore. And I think between that diary, which I no longer keep, and also this phenomenon, which I think we both partake in, of taking outfit photos and putting them on Instagram or sending them to friends, it's kind of made me realize how important cataloging is to how I get dressed. And I think it's more important, you know, those processes then say shopping in a new way or clearing out my wardrobe, or, you know, it's more about the ways that I document things as they go by. And I wonder if that actually comes back to fashion blogging, which is something we both did when we were younger, and I guess partially how we might have met.
I've been thinking about that recently, just in terms of the way that we use Instagram as a way of getting dressed. And yeah, I think that lots of us have ended up sharing sort of snapshots of our daily life, and particularly what we're wearing, in a way that mimics blogging.
Yeah.
It sort of made me think, it's so funny because to me, blogging seems so redundant in a way now that platforms like Instagram exist. Yet we're sort of, the captions are getting longer. We seem to be hankering for that format that we've maybe turned our backs on a little bit. Do you ever find that Instagram is sort of negative for your dressing and shopping habits?
You mean in terms of making me jealous or making me want to buy things?
Yeah.
I don't really, but I think I might have kind of trained myself to avoid that, you know? And it can be hard to avoid because there is such a culture of want on Instagram and of FOMO and of look how great I look and what a great time I'm having. I think sometimes, like, I feel like my outfit is really good, and then I take a photo, I'm like, I can't put this on Instagram.
Well, also equally, I think that sometimes I'm not that happy with my outfit, and then I take a picture of part of it, and everyone on Instagram loves it, and I suddenly think this was a success. And that seems, like, actually that happened this morning. I was in a rut, and I was really struggling to know what to wear, so I put some lipstick on and took a photograph of what I was wearing, and I thought I looked great and put together in the photo in a way that didn't reflect how I was feeling. And that sort of felt like a lie in a way.
But did you feel good as a result of it?
Yeah.
I think that's good then. I think social media gets such flack for making people unhappy. And I do understand that it does and it can. Mm. But I also think there is a flip side of that. And it is what you just said. or how if I do like my outfit and I share it on Instagram, it can feel really nice. So I think, yeah, maybe it is about finding a way to make it work for you. One item that defines a new beginning for many women is the wedding dress. Both Stevie and I have been thinking a lot recently about beginnings and weddings and their role in contemporary life and their symbolism. So we thought it would be interesting to talk to someone who had made their own wedding dress. Meet Abigail, who runs The Ray, a textile design business, with her sister in London.
It seemed like the natural thing to do, really, because I was studying fashion and textile design in Argentina. I was already making all of my own clothes, so I didn't want to pay someone else to make something when I could make it myself. I also was partly making my own clothes for kind of environmental and social reasons. I became more kind of politically aware when we moved over to South America about the impacts of what we buy.
What was it exactly that you were seeing there that was making you think you should be making rather than buying?
Well, there's a huge kind of artisan culture in like Andean areas where people are still making all of their own clothes, but also in Chile and in Argentina where we lived, there are loads of young designers and the market's much more open. So for me, it seemed like, well, it was a great opportunity. And also there are companies that make clothes in Argentina to sell in Argentina that use sweatshop labour and slave labour. So I was quite aware of that as well and not wanting to contribute to that problem. I've made clothes all my life, really, for my Barbie.
Classic entry point to lots of people.
I wanted to become a fashion designer and I can remember going into my careers interview at secondary school. And I said that to the careers teacher and he said, I think you should think of something more realistic.
That's terrible. How do these people end up in those chairs, honestly?
Awful.
So I decided that I'd become a journalist instead, which probably wasn't that much more realistic.
If only then.
So what was the first step when you decided you wanted to make your own wedding dress?
I just went on Pinterest, obviously, and looked at photos of dresses that I love, like that dress that Barbara Streisand wears in Hello Dolly when she comes down the stairs. Mm. It's a bit like gold mermaid dress and she's got gold feathers coming out of her hair. Musicals were a big influence on me. It was just so perplexing, like the amount of choice when you can have any dress that you can come up with. In the end, to just make it a bit easier for myself, I decided to use a commercial pattern. So I used a pattern designed by a pattern maker called Gertie. I did have ideas about the shape because by the time you're in your 30s, you know what suits you. So it wasn't anything like the meringue. So although I don't dress kind of vintagey every day, I do love vintage clothes and kind of 40s and 50s shapes suit my body. So that seemed like the road to go down.
I love that idea of the wedding being kind of like an opportunity to indulge in, you know, one particular thing you like with what you're saying about musicals, or if it's just the 40s or 50s kind of shapes, it might not be what you like want in your wardrobe every day, but it's an opportunity to like go big and to like to, even if that doesn't mean like a big meringue dress.
I definitely think that played into me eventually going for white fabric because that's something that I would never wear in my normal life. The whole idea of wearing a white dress, although we kind of imagine it as being this kind of virginal, pure thing, actually seems more ostentatious and just a kind of symbol of being a bride rather than being a virgin. And I did actually get chocolate wine and sweat on my wedding dress, so, you know.
Where is the dress now?
It's in a suitcase under my bed.
Have you ever worn it again?
Actually, the first time that I wore it wasn't on my wedding day because such bad luck.
Where did you wear it?
We had an engagement party at my parents' house before we got, well, we were hoping it was going to be after we got married, but because of visa problems and paperwork and stuff, we actually couldn't get married until after the party, so I was finishing the dress on the morning of the party, stuck the hem up with some of that magic.
Wonder web.
What else did you wear as part of your outfit? Did you have a bag? What were your shoes like?
I did go down the route of something old, something new, something borrowed and something blue. I love all those kind of rituals and folk traditions. And in fact, in my company, The Ray, a lot of the print designs that we do are based on folk traditions and symbolism. And I just find myself so attracted to that idea of repeating the same thing that hundreds of people have done over hundreds of years before you do it. So I wore blue shoes. My mum lent me a ring, something old. I remember now. It's probably my tights. No, I know. I had a vintage hat. Something new would have been my underwear. Yeah.
Seems good luck.
How and where did you spill wine and chocolate down your dress?
That was actually at the engagement party. So on my wedding day, the dress was stained, but I don't care. It was a drunken party and my mum made loads of delicious food, including something that had chocolate sauce on it and curry, and there was loads of red wine, so yeah, it's just a disaster waiting to happen, really.
Those are the best kind of stains, I think. Those stains are okay in my book, I think. When we emailed earlier, you had some interesting thoughts about the wedding and the wedding dress as both kind of a symbol of a beginning but also of an end.
It did feel like a new beginning. It felt like a new beginning in our relationship, a kind of declaration of the two of us becoming a family unit, which for other people I suppose might happen when you have children. It's not necessary to get married to be a family, but it did have an emotional effect on me and I felt that we were closer after we got married. But I do think the white dress does kind of give you an image of like a sacrificial virgin. I suppose in the past, a woman could be seen to be a kind of sacrifice if she was used as a bartering chip between families. So the image of a woman in white walking down the aisle to be sacrificed for power or money is quite a potent one, I think. And also, the wedding always comes at the end of a rom-com or at the end of a novel, so it is an end of, you know, who will I spend the rest of my life with? Those kind of questions. But it's the beginning of something else too.
You can see Abby's design work at theraydesigns.com and on Etsy. We're also going to be sharing pictures of her wedding dress on our Instagram account, layers.podcast.
Related habit I'd like to change is that I would like to try harder more often. You know, it's not that anyone else is telling me I'm lazy, I'm feeling that I'm lazy. And I like love work. I used to love working a look, and now I've stopped working a look so much and I regret that.
The style related habit that I would like to change is to wear more colour and maybe less black. Although I love black. Just need to let go of the love, you know.
Probably taking better care of my clothes in terms of sewing buttons back on, replacing zips, you know, kind of fixing tears. And I know how to sew, so I can do it. And when you do it, it's wonderful because, you know, it you really feel great, but also kind of getting really crafty.
A style-related habit I'd like to change is being really, really lazy about my hair. I just never managed to get into the whole hair thing, but I feel like it would be good if I did.
A style-related habit that I would like to change is my buying so many jackets. I know it's insane. Also, I think it's buying a lot of stuff. The habit I'd really like to change is to buying so much and getting all my fashion fixes and maybe buying less and buying more quality. And I have got better at that, but that's mainly because I'm too busy and I haven't had time to shop. But it's kind of resulted in I have bought less and they're more considered purchases. And I do want to get more bang for my buck. So yeah, that's probably what I'd like to move towards.
I think I'm quite comfortable with most of my style-related habits now, but the one that I've been working on in the last few years is getting rid of any item of clothing that doesn't make me feel like my best self.
What's the thing that you would like to change, Stevie?
I think I'd like to discover my teenage love of charity shopping again. It's something I used to be so good at. And I mean, I've never been one of those people who like scores Prada heels, but I think that shopping secondhand was when my style was quite brave and experimental. And I like that I could take risks with items of clothing that only cost a few pounds. I think I sort of miss that fun and the low stakes. I mean, as we were talking about earlier, these days I can really feel myself getting sucked into this vortex of longing every time I scroll through Instagram and falling in love with very well-styled new women's wear brands and £400 like leather or suede shoes. And I can't afford them, but somehow I always end up feeling like I must absolutely find a way of having them and calculating what I won't spend in my everyday life to afford them. And I just, that's not a very liberating feeling. And I want to kind of release myself from that habit.
Why do you think you don't shop in charity shops anymore?
That's a good point. I think that's about time. Yeah. I think that really when I was enjoying charity shopping most was when I was about 18, 19 and I was at college and I would have time to just rummage and I knew where to go. Maybe it's about having moved to London. I haven't really explored the charity shops properly since.
I find the options really overwhelming here. And also there's a lot of tat at the same time.
That's a good point.
But I have gotten very lucky in Hampstead and Chelsea, I will say.
See, those are always the areas that I assume would be very good.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of the older rich ladies leaving all of their gems.
They're more expensive, but that's gonna happen, I guess.
Have you ever found anything in a charity shop in those areas that was really great?
I found a really good black wool coat, which I have to say was about six sizes too big for me, but it was really well made and it was kind of double breasted, and every time I wore it people would say things like, oh my god, is that Comme des Garçons? And I'd be like, well no, but thank you. You're validated.
Amazing.
Me.
What about you? What are some of your style-related New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this kind of with regards to the year ahead. The weather has been so cold for so long, it feels like. Mm. And I think I'm just living in like layers of winter wool and often like two turtlenecks and two pairs of tights and Uniqlo, heat tech, everything, which is fine, but I would like more space in my wardrobe that is between that end of things and then the stuff I buy and only ever wear on holiday, because it's not really conducive to real life to have only those two polar extremes. Mm. I think I would like more of a useful middle ground. I also think that I have, in the past couple of years, I have filled my wardrobe with items that do bring me joy and do make me happy. And I've really kind of cornered that end of the market in my own wardrobe, which is good. And it makes me happy to wear those pieces. But I think I probably also need more practical items that work well, that I don't have to think about so much and that I can actually get a lot of wear out of at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe I really had this when I was getting dressed this morning and feeling really dissatisfied after having worn, well, the same as you, roll necks from Uniqlo and lots of jumpers for what seems like weeks and weeks. But I think that the items of clothing that pull together an outfit are what's missing for me. Maybe that's what you're talking about. I really noticed that jackets, I don't have jackets that I can put over an item, put over an outfit without feeling like I've undone what I like about the outfit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
So warm layers that feel maybe chic or elegant rather than scruffy and woolen.
I sometimes feel like I ruin perfectly good outfits by putting a cardigan over them just because I'm afraid of being cold.
Yeah, totally.
So I would like a chic alternative to the cardigan, if that's possible.
Hopefully you'll find one in the coming weeks. Another beginning to dress for is starting a new job. There's a lot of weight to it. What you wear will affect people's first impressions of you, and maybe even how well they think you'll do the job. Colleen Kelsey shared her diary detailing what she wore for three such beginnings.
to make up like framework for the person that was learning.
February 2012. What does one wear for their first job in fashion? Prada sounds good, but I didn't have Prada. I was 22, recently graduated, with zero reporting experience, and very much at the mercy of my anxiety. I really knew nothing, but I was very eager to learn. A friend at New York Magazine's fashion blog, The Cut, recruited me to interview designers backstage at Fashion Week. The assignment was to play word association games with Maria Cornejo, Aaron Featherston, and Patrick Ravel, and get them to say funny things. Green and dying of nervousness, I suited up in as much armor as possible. It was a time in my life where I was embracing excess. I was going out almost every night and actively acquiring designer clothes that weren't focused on utility. I spent an exorbitant amount of money on a white lambskin leather jacket that, once unboxed, seemed to attract every smear of dirt in the five boroughs. I'd wear clear PVC clothing over a bra and underwear in public. I slowly put everything on step by step. A cropped black leather bustier from American Apparel, black tights, a frothy white eyelet pinafore from Chloe Sevigny's line at opening ceremony. For shoes, a pair of discounted spiky black platform boots from Alexander Wang. They were 6 inches high and made me feel like an assassin. I'm 5'2", and had worn them on a lot of dates with tall men, so I knew I could look any subject in the eye with those on. I packed my vintage, black, eBay-purchased Chanel bag with a recorder and notebook and shrugged on my black shaggy monkey fur coat. Not really monkey, obviously. Just slang for a goat fur. I wore my usual red lip, Chanel La Fascinante layered over NARS's Cruella pencil. It was a lot of look, but it got the job done. March 2013. When I got the job at Interview Magazine as an editorial assistant, I reread half of the Andy Warhol diaries and thought of what would be a casual and efficient wardrobe for answering phones, interviewing celebrities, and marking up layouts with a red pen. But I also wanted to make a good impression. I went to the Comme des Garçons store on 22nd Street. A striped CDG Play shirt with the red heart with eyes patch is ubiquitous, but something about it felt luxe on my minuscule soon-to-be assistant budget. I bought it immediately. Whenever I walk into a room as the new person, I immediately feel like a misfit. So that first morning, I poured a shot of espresso, and out came the Alexander Wang assassin boots. Opaque black tights again, and a high-waisted leather, A-line, six-gored skirt from Reformation. I was trying very hard. Worn all together, and with the Chanel bag, and the same red lip that has since become a regular signature, I felt stylish yet serious. A few days later, I would have a fight with my boyfriend after leaving a party at the MoMA. We were walking down the subway stairs, and at an opportune moment in our dialogue, the heel of my assassin boot detached from the upper, cutting me down to size. The boots were unfixable, so I left them in a brown paper bag on the bottom step of the stoop of my building. An hour later, they were gone. August 2017. The thing about doing anything during a New York summer is that you must think of yourself as an offering to the whims of the weather before all else. In the days before I started a new job at Glossier this past August, I took a mini vacation, where I laid up on the bleachers surrounding a community pool in Brooklyn, in a navy bikini, reading an old friend's soon-to-be-published novel and trying to get as much of a tan as possible. That first morning, I woke early and rifled through my closet. It wasn't a moment of magic or transformation. I just wanted to feel like myself. I ironed my cobalt blue Zara cotton shirt with a deep V that wraps around the torso. Earrings by Rachel Comey. Like most days, I reached for a pair of vintage high-waisted Levi's with the hem chopped off at the ankle. It took me years of lace and leather to realize that the most comfortable thing and the best-looking thing in the world are Levi's. Number 517, high-waisted, slightly bootcut, tight on the waist and butt and through the thigh. Jeans. Another thing Fran Lebowitz has always been right about. I slid into a pair of heeled, pointy-toed burgundy satin mules purchased from the $10 bin at the vintage store my friend works at. They remind me of Venice, or Bourbon Kings. My bag was a black mesh French market bag, bought on Amazon for $2, and that Instagram stores have been selling for $50. Inside it, a clear Muji zip pouch for my phone, cards, lipstick, and a hand fan that I got in an Eckhouse Lauder show. I never wear makeup in the summer, but in the interest of presenting well, I did my brows and applied a coat of Chanel La Diva, a vivid, sheer matte pink that feels hot and like Miami. All the pieces were really familiar, lending their own kind of magic.
Colleen Kelsey is a writer in New York City. She works in brand development at Glossier and has written for Interview, Playboy, and more. You can find her on Instagram at Colleen Kelsey.
I liked how clearly Colleen's diary showed the way that one's own style can change over time and also how relatively quickly that can happen. I recently chatted with Kate O'Donnell about that, or more specifically, how to create a new wardrobe for yourself from scratch. We were sitting in a room that was being set for dinner, so apologies for the sound of cutlery being laid at the start.
My name is Kate O'Donnell. I'm a transgender theatre maker, performer. I'm also the artistic director of Trans Creative, which is a new trans theatre company. And I'm also a bit of an activist as well, a trans activist.
And we first met at the Contact Theatre in Manchester.
And I fancied your dad.
And you did fancy my dad.
And you were like, whatever you do, don't fancy my dad.
So that was about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember you wearing this really fabulous grey feather jacket. Mm. I don't know if that's correct. That's how I remember you. And my first impression of you was that you were just very stylish and also very confident. You seemed to have this real presence about you. Mm. And I think we met because we asked to join your table because there weren't enough seats around.
Yeah.
That was my first impression. That's been my lasting impression. And I just wondered, is that something that's always come naturally to you, being confident and wearing your clothes in a certain way, or is that something that you had to learn?
That's interesting. I think they go hand in hand, actually. I think they can do a double bluff. You can not be confident and wear some clothes to make you feel more confident. Like, sometimes I feel like if you dress up, you're probably going to have a better night. I always think a really good confidence trick is to wear a hat, because people think you're more confident than you are. I've always loved clothes. Do you know what I mean? Obsessed with my mum's clothes and my dad's. For anybody who had any new items of clothing, I literally used to run upstairs and try it on. So I think I've always been drawn to clothes. I can remember when I was three going to nursery and really wanting to wear a particular jumper. Mm. There was a baby blue jumper that had three buttons on the collar. And I just wanted it. I made my mum wash it. And I remember the steam just rising up it. She was trying to dry it in front of the radiator. So I've always been interested in clothes. Mm. I used to hang outside like the posh kids, because we had I had hand-me-down clothes from my brothers. And so I didn't get many new clothes. And when I did, I would not take them off. And I'd really be sad that I grew out of them.
And you grew up in Coventry, didn't you?
Yeah,
in the 70s.
Yeah, I was born in 1965. So yeah, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. So clothes were kind of quite out there anyway. I remember getting a pair of platform shoes for Christmas. We were quite poor, our family, so I got them for Christmas. And again, didn't want my feet to grow. But I loved them. Oxblood, brogue platforms.
They sound cool. Yeah. Are they the kind of thing that you would wear today?
Actually, I bought some men's white platforms that are quite similar, actually, recently in a vintage shop, and I love them. Men's clothes in the 70s was pretty brilliant if you were trans. You know, well, I didn't know I was trans back then. You know, if you wanted a girly outlet, it was quite androgynous, the 70s. You know, flares, long hair, platforms.
Mm. You transitioned in 2003.
Yeah.
Is that right? And how did you go about creating a whole new wardrobe from scratch?
I was thinking about that today, and it is a big thing to do, because I had quite a bit of style, you know, before, because when I lived as a boy and also as a drag queen. But one of the first things to go, I got rid of a lot of my drag clothes because I felt like that wasn't where my gender lived. Mm. And I do regret some of that, actually. You could either do it really slowly or brutally. And I went for the kind of more brutal option. The only thing I kept was some 70s again, some 70s leather jackets, a lovely blue one and a cream one that I've still got.
Yeah.
So there's one of the few things that have remained.
Mm.
But what I was thinking about this morning, how I did it was, I did it a lot online.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of mail order. So I got to really know this woman. This woman who used to drop off, you know, the parcels, was really part of my transition. And because I transitioned kind of in front of her, she was kind of keeping up with it. So it was kind of brought to my door, because when you first transition, you're a bit intimidated to go into shops, I think, and try on stuff. And I remember if I ever did, you kind of stopped breathing the whole time. You went, you know, if you had to get a bra fitted or, you know, it'd be quite intimidating. So I did a lot of it at home. And it's insane. I've never bought as many clothes that I've never spent that much money.
In one go.
Because you're trying to find your style.
Yeah.
You know, and you're trying to piece it together, but you're moving through it really fast and furious, you know. And
did you have an idea of what you wanted to look like? Or were you working with other people? This woman at the mail order company, was she kind of suggesting things?
No.
Was she like, she wasn't like
No,
a stylist?
She was just arriving with it. But I think what's interesting is I kept buying going out clothes. And eventually a friend of mine said, you just need to buy some jeans and some tops because that's what women wear. Do you know what I mean? I was literally, everything I was ordering was like, where are you going? I mean, back then it was about passing, which is a whole other concept, you know. And I think I let go some of my queerness and my style. I think as a man, we look more queer. And as a woman, I was being more conforming, actually, in some of my choices. When I first transitioned, I grew my hair, I dyed it blonde, and I bought a pink cardigan. I'm thinking, that will get me by. It was a real binary item, and I thought I'd get away with it. But all it meant was people just asked me if I was married or got kids, and I was like, oh, shit.
So it sounds like that's something you felt like you ought to wear.
It was to deflect from, because early in transition, before you have hormones, my hair was still short. I didn't even know if my hair was going to grow, actually, because I did buy a wig at one point. I thought I was just going to get a lot of hassle. So I thought, if I've got blonde hair and pink cardigan, that's usually associated with being a girl.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to push that. So some of my choices were probably, I wore skirts a lot, and I really hardly ever wear skirts now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I definitely did a bit of binary.
And you dressing. Made a decision that you
wanted to safety. Yeah, for safety. And it was probably less style, more to try and help me appear as a woman,
yeah.
I think. And I went for more of a binary. Of course, I was interested in fashion, so some of the choices would have been about fashion as well. But yeah, because gender dysphoria is an awful thing. You know, you can be really dressed up and look in the mirror and you still see a man. So some days you're battling with that. I had quite a difficult time once in Topshop, that's the name of the shop. I was buying some jeans and somebody behind the counter was literally going down the tills telling them that I was trans.
When was
this? That was very early on, I'd say, you know, 2003, 2004. And I was, I complained about them there and then. And I remember I said to the woman behind the counter, I went, do you know, you need to tell your members that trans people will be coming in here. We will be spending money. I said, and the other thing you need to remember is I am very hormonal. So I could easily kick off.
Yeah.
And I remember I went home and I felt a little bit like thrown by that. Mm. So I padded my bra.
Right.
So I was really aware sometimes I would put more makeup on, pad my bra, you know, push some kind of feminine agenda if I was feeling less confident. Whereas now, look at me.
Well, yeah, let's talk about what you're wearing now.
Yeah, it's very, like, I've got dungarees on. I think this could be a boy's shirt. I've just got some black boots. A lot of my clothes are much more boyish now. You know, my hair's short, it's blue. I've got my red lippy on.
Yeah.
So I still probably do a bit of that, counteracting a really boyish look with a red lippy.
Yeah.
Also because it's kind of really cool, you know, and stylish. Yeah. But, and I bought some, this is French, vintage French workwear.
And this is something that more and more women are wearing.
Yeah.
This whole idea of workwear.
Yeah.
How does that feel for you?
It feels different. It feels different. And it does feel like returning a bit more to me. I used to live in London when I was young and, you know, I was at college here. And I did used to wear Oshkosh dungarees, Doc Martens. I used to wear a lot of 50s jackets and shirts and I had a quiff. And so I did used to mix it up. So there's a bit of return to a more queerer, you know, I'm leaving the bit of the heteronormative cisgender look a little bit behind.
Mm.
And I'm enjoying it. Mm. It's like having an adolescence in a way when you transition.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess maybe what's interesting about what you've said is that you're not always just choosing clothes because you like them. You're choosing clothes as an armour sometimes.
Yes.
So do you feel like you still have to do that today?
No, not so much. I feel much freer today, and I feel much more able to express whatever mood I'm in. I mean, I am very much a mood dresser.
How important to you is dressing comfortably?
Not that important. Right. If I love it, yeah. I will suffer. Absolutely.
Because I quite often think that people who have a presence in what they wear, or they can wear clothes glamorously, aka people who wear their clothes rather than being worn by their clothes, are maybe more likely to think, fuck it, if my shoes are pinching a little bit, it's worth
it. My shoes pinch, because I have a wide foot, so I will suffer slightly, but not too much, and I can't suffer as much as I used to. But if I'm really like a look, I will get some spanks on. I will do that thing. There's something magical about having clothes made.
Yeah.
That is a whole other... I think there is something to be said for getting 3 things made a year that fit you perfectly,
really,
rather than buying 25
dream.
Things that don't.
Yeah. I mean, I personally have this fantasy about being able to afford a Savile Row suit.
You should do it. You would look
Savile
amazing
Roses.
In that.
I know, I would. But... I don't know when I'm going to get there in terms of being able to afford it, but what would you, if you could have 3 bespoke pieces?
I think a suit, definitely. Yeah. A child suit would be beautiful. Jackets, I'm obsessed with jackets. Mm-hmm. I have a real weakness when it comes to jackets. That's probably one of my...
What sort of jackets have
any,
you got that you've...
I have 60 jackets.
Oh my gosh.
At least.
Where do you keep them?
Well, I've had to buy a 3-bedroom house. Just to have
just
them
for
all.
The jacket.
I used to live in a
1-bedroom
flat. I can't cope. And they're the one thing that I really struggle to part with.
Mm.
I did let 2 go the other day, but literally under the supervision of a friend I trusted.
Was there a moment when you felt like you really found your style? When it felt like something clicked?
I think it's been more since I cut my hair short. I think when I gave up that binary, when I left that binary and gave up on it, you know, and stopped trying to worry about looking too like a cisgendered woman,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I split up a relationship, which can often happen, you know, the haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been dyeing my hair brown because my boyfriend quite liked dark hair. I've been growing it long because he liked long hair, and I did not really have the hair for that. And I went to the hairdresser, you know, to have the post breakup haircut,
the movie montage scene.
Yes. And I went to get that done, and normally apparently people go red or blonde, and I wanted to go grey. Because
oh,
I
wow.
wanted to go back to my natural colour. And just as I did that, grey became really fashionable. So it's about
and
4 years
it?
Ago. About 4 years ago. So I gradually got my hair cut shorter and shorter, greyer and greyer. And it just hit my stride. I felt like I really found myself. And I started working for this charity called Dress for Success, who help women back to work by styling them for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get the job, you get 5 outfits
yeah.
free. So
yeah.
it's all free. So I became a stylist for them around the same time. But that's where I felt like I just thought, yeah, this is a great breakup thing, you know, to change your style.
Mm.
And I did. And I thought about being a stylist for a while. And then I started with kind of lilac washing my hair. And then I found this bluey turquoise colour.
Mm.
And I just stuck with it. And I felt that means you have to up your game with your style. You can't kind of have that hair. You need to have things have to have a bit more of an edge.
Mm.
So I think I changed. I finally allowed myself to have that edge, and it became quite a queer look, I suppose.
Mm.
I feel very free now because of my short hair.
Yeah,
you know, I think it just freed me up from worrying about looking too feminine, or it that was irrelevant. That had gone. I think I've always wanted to look as queer as possible, but my life seems to be allowing more places for that to happen. You know, my look and my life are matching more now, and I think for a while they didn't.
Do you think that's because of where we are now in the year 2017, that people there's more room for trans people to dress in different ways or
I
to be on the spectrum?
I don't know if there is. I think the binaries are really strong for trans. It's really strange. With trans people, in an ideal world, what should have happened is trans people should have arrived and blown the binaries out the water and freed us all up. But actually, they kind of consolidated them. And I think trans people, in order to pass them, trans people ran to them. And you do. You run to your binary, then you let it go,
mm-hmm.
you know, normally, and you find somewhere else. That's definitely what I did. I ran to that binary, and then gradually I'd move back, you know, and I don't know where I am now on that binary. I just think I'm a bit more interesting how I dress. And I feel it's more me, and it's less to me being male or female. You know, I kind of like the fact that I'm not trying to dress sexy. I'm not trying to dress feminine. I'm trying to, it's more about style, you know, and an expression of who I am, you know, more than, but some of those looks happen to be sexy and feminine, but that isn't my deliberate aim. Mm. Whereas, you know, I would have, was a bit more self-conscious of that, like padding my bra when I had a low day. Do you know what I mean? Before, then I just got a boot job, so I didn't need to worry.
Quick remortgage of the house.
Yes. How did you know? Have you seen the show?
I read it online somewhere.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah.
I heard you say that.
Yeah.
The hat trick she mentions is definitely true. I sometimes wear a hat, kind of without thinking about it. But now people have started to say to me, oh, Anna, like, Anna's a hat person. I'm definitely not a hat person, but I think if you, you know, it's a very easy way to make a lasting impression on people.
I think that you are a hat person.
Oh,
like,
you
were wearing your black hat yesterday and I didn't even think to comment on it because it just seemed so you. And yeah, why don't you think you're a hat person?
Because I don't, like, collect hats. And, like, I think hat people are often kind of obnoxious. Don't you think?
Maybe.
Well, I don't want to be an obnoxious hat person.
Yeah, and the fact that I was asking you earlier what kind of hat this black hat is, and you said it's a fedora, and we were both like, ugh, fedora.
Fedoras are maligned, like, probably unfairly because of the men who wear them.
Johnny Depp. That's instantly what I think
also, like,
of with a fedora.
Mid-2000s Justin Timberlake, which is very dated now.
I mean,
you know, the waistcoat.
Give that look time. Give that whole era time.
I think you need to get yourself a fedora, Stevie.
I'm definitely not a hat person at all. I feel very self-conscious wearing them, and I don't like putting them on unless I can see my own reflection in the mirror.
You will get used to it once you start wearing a hat. I think it could change your life.
We'll see.
Thanks for listening today. Production was by Lucy Dearlove. We have an email address. Send us comments, stories, or any interesting tidbits you might think we'll like. It's layerspodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media. On Instagram, we're layers.podcast, and on Twitter, we're layerspodcast. We'll be sharing pictures of some of the items we discussed today.
Also, thank you to Bree Graham for letting us record in your flat. We'll leave you with Loved and Lost, our regular spot for stories of items that went astray. Today's guest is Rebecca May Johnson, a writer, literary curator, and cook living in London.
When I lose a piece of clothing, what I've lost is a version of myself. What I see in the mirror is shaped by my mind as much as by a sewing machine. I am always as lavishly dressed as I feel. In my imagination, a limp garment can evoke a shaded evening at which I gleam with precision, or spinning in a queer discotheque bathed in colour, or a lunch full of savoury flavour in a bare white room. When I experience a failure of imagination, it falls flat. And I may as well be wearing nothing. I'm horribly limited, said Sylvia Plath. I feel her, especially when I lose the ability to wear the selves I cannot think myself into. But I keep the woven copies in the drawers under my bed, in case. When so much living has been denied, do not believe the person who tells you to throw away the unworn clothes that still glimmer with yearning. It could be a you that you have yet to try on. I have, or I had, two pairs of satin trousers, one in deepest purple and one in deepest green. They were dramatically cut down in price in a shop that normally exceeded my budget. So much so that I bought two pairs. I did not know where they fitted in, and I bought them at a time when I didn't know where I did either. I wore them under pallid canteen lighting with 16-centimetre high black PVC platform strapped up wedges and a blank face and black bowl cut hair, and watched a cruel lover eat plates of beans and sausages. I didn't know so much about the cruelty then, and the satin radiated possibility. I had in mind a Tom Ford era Gucci version of myself in darkness and flash lighting and opulent sexuality. Glistering jewel-toned hues and reflective textiles against dark velvet walls that dampened the sound. I put them away some time after that. The trousers have been held over a bin liner in front of me several times in the intervening years. The legitimacy of the fact I have two pairs has been questioned. Each time I have defended them, setting aside a self I want to wear again. Now I can't remember which bed they are resting under. Did I agree to let go of them? I can't remember. But I'm not ready, I realise, and I'm casting around again for satin and darkness.